Welcome to the Evolved Caveman, where men learn to be successful and happy with your host, Dr. John Schinnerer, as he shares the most impactful ideas and practices for you to get the most from your relationships, your work, and from your life. Now here's Dr. John.
Hey everybody, this is Dr. John back with the latest episode of the Evolved Caveman. And today we're going to be talking with Zev Helpern about relationships, how to stay connected throughout the day, and how to be better in the bedroom. Zev he's enjoyed a 30-year career as a licensed psychotherapist, relationship and intimacy coach, podcast host, author, and speaker. Zev works with couples addressing all aspects of relationship, including improving communication and intimacy. He is a sought-after professional for couples who are looking for more from their intimate lives or want to rekindle their romance. He is also the host of the Stimulate Your Relationship show. Zev, welcome. Thanks for coming aboard.
Thanks for having me, John. Really pleasure.
All right. So let's start out with, what do you look like at your very best?
So I'm a rabbi's son, like the son of the preacher man. And, I spend my young life watching, a grand person up on the stage in front of people talking about the most important things. And, there's something that could make you feel a bit small. You can get a lot out of it, but you can also feel like, wow, how could you ever possibly influence people in the way, 900 people, 1,000 people and their families. So I think, what resulted with me is that I learned to be a speaker, and it was scary as hell. For me, I mean, it's scary for most people. It's probably one of the scariest things people report, that they'd rather die than public speak. But, and I created these, and I did a lot of speaking, but when I did the speaking about intimacy, about helping couples, get their relationships together, really, a deep dive into their intimate relationships, literally being in their bedroom and getting just a standing ovation for giving them, the kinds of things that they wanted to hear. And that just felt so good. I felt like that I had arrived at that moment, that finally I've not only found what I was looking to do, but that I delivered it in a way that was so well received. And, the clapping, oh my goodness, and that was just fabulous. So I think I felt my best at that moment so far.
Fantastic. So overcoming that fear to become a speaker around intimacy.
Yeah, and especially something so personal to a whole group of people. It's one thing you can give a lecture. It's another thing to be with them talking about it. And because they're all nervous and jumpy and they don't want to hear about it. Some of them don't even want to be there. So I think that was just a pinnacle for me and what made me want to, keep on doing it. So like last year I did unlimited stimulation in California. This year we're doing ultimate stimulation.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I just did an interview with Melanie Curtin, who's a sex researcher, and to have that conversation in a public forum about sex and how to be better at sex was a little bit outside of my comfort zone, I got to say.
No doubt. And you rose to the occasion.
Yeah. And it's fun though. I mean, I really enjoyed the conversation as well. So let's start talking about creating romance in a long-term relationship. And how does one begin to go about doing that?
So there's so many ways. One is a lot of people report, in my office days when I was, talking to people in the office, and I would say, you got to be a little more romantic, and I'd hear things like, I'm not very romantic, or my wife doesn't have a romantic bone in her body, or, he's about as romantic as a wet, you hear that. And I learned that, no, actually, you can learn to be romantic. You can do romantic things. You can give things to your spouse. You can message, you can text, you can do things that are surprises. I personally, you know, have this like a little pantry, you know, where I collect stuff, you know, to make sure that it's not just a Valentine's Day thing. It's like a three times a month thing, you know, put a post-it, you know, something beaded, something that you created, not when you went to, you know, the Hallmark store and got, you know, a card. That's nice too. Believe me, it's nice to get a card that says, I love you and I appreciate you. But when someone makes it, that's just unbelievable. And
yeah, it's interesting that you say the Hallmark store, because I've heard from women in marriages before, like they get really annoyed because of the lack of thought and consideration put into a gift. So Valentine's or birthday comes up, the husband runs out to the Hallmark store, buys some tchotchke that there's really not much thought put into. It's kind of like, right. Oh shit, I need something for Valentine's Day. And the wife is annoyed because there's so little thought put into it. And so I think part of it is the time and attention and thoughtfulness put into the gift. How well do you know your partner? How well do you know their preferences and their likes and what will make them happy?
I mean, they come home, you know, and there's a trail of some kind of candy leading somewhere. It's fun, you know.
Yeah,
meet somebody actually, and they led to the bathtub, you know, and indulge your, you know, spouse in just a sponge bath, you know, that it could be wonderful. You know, there is that, you know, that 10-15% of the time where they come home in not a great mood. And they're not, you know, they don't receive this wonderful thing that you've decided to do for them. And that's okay, too. It's in the trying, because I think you hit the mark more times than you don't hit the mark. But you can, the things that you create with your hands are so better received than, I mean, then again, a diamond ring might be good, too. But, you know, that's a whole other story.
And I think, you know, part of it is, part of the element of romance is the surprise. That, you know, people say, oh, I'm not romantic, or my partner's not romantic. I think part of romance is taking someone by surprise and like leaving a love note for them on the windshield of their car, and they don't expect it. And when they receive it, there's a, oh,
they go on a trip, they go in there and they open their bag, you know, and they see that you put something in there. You wrote it, you put something in there. There's a warm feeling that happens. You'd have to be, you know, almost dead to not feel something.
Yeah. You know, that's one of the things I like doing is hiding notes around the house for my fiancé to find.
Some people use strings, you know, they leave strings so that you can pull different things out.
Oh, that's cool.
Even more, you know, you don't have to pull like the whole bookcase down, you know, just you make them light. So that, you know, it doesn't result in a hospital visit. There's also another thing which I like to tell couples is explore, experiment, and play. Play mm-hmm. is a very underrated thing for adults. They don't do it. They don't want to do it. They feel irresponsible. People have told them that it's stupid to act like a child. But the truth is that, you know, we have children inside all of us. And when we act like children, you know, when the kids run into the cold water and we don't, you know, at the beach, they just run in, you know, it's like without even thinking. It's really an important thing to, for instance, go out to a bar separately, meet there. Don't drive there together. Meet there together. You're sitting at the bar and all of a sudden she says to him, you know, by the way, I'm not wearing any underwear tonight. You know, that kind of thing. I mean, that's a, mm-hmm. These are the novelty. Novelty is something that marriages and long relationships lack.
Novelty is a big piece of passion and interest, desire. Because once we lose that novelty, if we just know what's coming over and over, the more routine that sex gets, the less exciting it gets.
Right. And you know, novelty can express itself, you know, in so many different ways. You just have to, like date nights, you know, date nights were created from that whole reality of what that does to the brain, you know, that you're doing something different, that it's all, you know, that you're together and this feels very good. But the truth is that I've seen and heard men and women say, you know, we go on date nights, but, you know, I freaking hate them, you know, because, you know, like we go on them and now they're obligations and we go to the same damn restaurant, we go to the same place. And I don't think people realize that they need to infuse novelty into that that whole idea. And when you do, you create anticipation.
Yeah, and I love anticipation. Anticipation is a positive emotion. It's a beautiful thing to look forward to a Friday night where you have something that you're really looking forward to, like a concert. And one of the things that I tell a lot of men that I talk to is it seems to me that men become poor planners, that we kind of we offload that responsibility to our wife, our spouse, our partner, because they have control of the social calendar generally. And so we over time just kind of give up this planning. And so one of the big ideas is, get yourself on an email list of concerts coming through town if you like music, or comedy shows, or Broadway musicals. Know what's coming into town. Buy tickets ahead of time. Clear the date with your partner. Don't tell them what's coming up. Surprise them. And do this routinely. Like, go to different restaurants. Like, remind yourself that you can plan again and plan nights out. And it's so easy in this day and age with apps like OpenTable or Yelp or StubHub, you know, to get a reservation in a nice city, to get a hotel room if you want to do that, to get tickets to a concert or sports. Like, remind yourself to plan ahead, because to Zev's point, that anticipation is fantastic. I love it when I get, you know, a Saturday night coming up on my calendar. I'm like, holy shit, we got tickets to Queen tonight. Love that.
Right. A lot of people, you know, when I talk to them, I say, you know, put three things on the calendar this month, because I know there's nothing on the calendar. Put three things on, and in 3 months, if you do, you know, those nine things, you'll be amazed. You'll look back and you'll say, we did nine things together. Some of them we planned, some of them, you know, you wanted to do, some of them I wanted to do. But the calendar is a good way to keep things going, because, you know, the weeks and months slip by and we just lose ourselves. It bleeds into, you know, and we get into this humdrum thing and we can't unstick ourselves.
So, Zev, I got a question for you here. So I've made this offer, this suggestion to many men, and some men reply with, well, we don't like the same type of music, or we don't have similar interests. So, you know, she likes country music and I'm not really into country. What would you suggest in that case?
I'd suggest that people figure out a way. And you know, look, I have it in my own life. All of a sudden I close my eyes, I blink my eyes, my girls are into country music. Graduated classic rock. All of a sudden all the radio stations are playing country music. I say, what the hell's going on here? This is insane. I learned to like it. I learned to go, you know what? There's country music has changed a lot, all kinds of music. So I think it's important to what do you like, honey? What do you like, honey? I'll go to something you like. And, you know, even if I have to grin and bear it, I'll try the best I can, because I think it's important to do the things that, you know, our partners, you know, we can't always do everything mutual. I mean, sure, go with a girlfriend to the country thing, you know, if you want to. But, you know, the truth is, she says, I'd really rather go with you. I want you to be there. I want to hold your hand. You know, you don't have to think about the country stars, you know, if you want, although there's plenty of sites at country, you know, concerts, boy, you could, you know, I mean, everywhere.
There's your point's well taken. I think, you know, one of the suggestions I make is pick three songs from her favorite country artist and listen to them several times so that you get a feel for it and you can begin to enjoy those songs. So when you go to the concert together with her, you can look forward to those songs. Because I've also seen couples we went to Dave Matthews a couple months ago, and there was a couple right in front of us where the guy was like a wet blanket. It was so obvious that he didn't want to be there. And the girl next to him was all excited and dancing. And, you know, she kind of keep looking over and kind of nudge him and say, come on, you know, let's enjoy this. And
he says, I'm ready to die. I'm ready to die.
You know, that kind of emotion at a concert brings you down. It affects your level of enjoyment. And so we've got to find a way to get ourselves up a couple notches in emotional energy to enjoy it, to try to step into it, to try and lean towards it. Otherwise, you're negatively impacting their night.
I think it falls into the, you know, we go over, we can extend ourselves for the people that we love. We can go the extra mile. We can make a special effort. It falls into the category of special effort that you wouldn't make for other people, but you'll make it for the person that you love. And if you do that, they'll hear that, they'll see that, and they'll feel that, because they know you might not want to be there. And, you know, if you go there and act like a dead fish, you know, then they might just send your ass home. You know what I mean? Why don't you just go home, go Uber home. I'll have a better time without you. You know,
And I think, you know, if you take that to an extreme, I think that it creates a problem and a rift. If you continually just like, hey, I bought my wife tickets to the country concert and well, I'll just send her with her best friend. And then you extend that over and over and she's just going out doing her own thing. She's going dancing by herself. She's going to concerts by herself. There's a risk there.
And oh yeah. In the course of human events,
relationship headed.
That's right. That's right. People meet people, you know, like things like that when they're on the same excitement level, you know, and they just have to just.
They vibe together.
There is a risk. There is a risk. So
let's talk a little bit about love languages. It's one of my favorite things. It's interesting to me, though. There's not really much relationship to back it up. It just makes sense intuitively to me that, you know, we're trying to step towards our partner and do things for them and show them our love. And there's certain ways that we can do that. And so, you know, if we're missing, there's, you know, so let's go through the love languages. So there's words of affirmation. There's acts of service. There's small gifts.
Right.
There's quality time. And what's the other one? I always miss one.
I miss one too.
Acts of service, kind words.
Presence, you know, gifts.
Quality of time or quality time, gifts.
Maybe there's one more. I don't know. But whatever it is. But what's your feeling about it? I mean, after you read that book.
It makes a lot of sense intuitively to me because I think a lot of men are doing acts of service for their wives. For example, you know, you wash the car, you take out the garbage, you do the dishes, and you're like, hey, that's me showing you I love you. But if your wife's top two love languages are touch and quality time, you're missing. And I think it happens all the time. And so I think just to know what the top two love languages of your partner are and to hit on those to make a connection it's a huge difference to me.
A lot of times we do for our partners what we think they need, not necessarily what they really need because we didn't ask them, you know,
or what we need.
What do you need? You know, or what we think we need to do for them. And really it needs to be what they need and vice versa. And then you have like, wow, two people doing things that they know that they need. It seems like it's going to be a happier union there.
Yeah. I mean, if my partner likes touch, and, you know, part of touch is sex, but part of it is just hugs or coming up behind her when she's doing the dishes and giving her a kiss on the neck or holding hands or cuddling on the couch or, you know, laying on the bed with her head on my chest. I mean, all those are ways that we connect.
Mine loves massage. Mm-hmm. So I was upstairs and I saw finally, this is a late holiday present that arrived today, like 10 days late. And it's these new massage guns.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen them, but boy, they're great for couple play. And I saw that. I said, oh my God, I got to get one of those and see, you know, what happens in my relationship. So then I can bring it out, you know, and take it out to the audience and go, hey guys, you don't got to even just hit the gun. You know, you'll make her happier than you can imagine and vice versa.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I'll often massage her feet. And sometimes I just do it kind of absent-mindedly. But, you know, those are acts of love. And those are ways that we let our partner know that they're cared for. And, you know, it's funny. I keep thinking about other love languages, like which ones are we missing? And one of the ones I was thinking about this morning is music. Like Jory and I connect via music and we've got like playlists that are connected to certain trips or the proposal. And so, you know, I'll be listening to music, a song will come up and I'll be like, oh, and I'll be like, oh, that would be great for Jory to hear right now. And I'll text her the song via Apple Music. And it's a great way to connect and let her know she's cared for.
That's a fabulous idea. You know, especially since we associate things we do with music that we hear. I mean,
well, there's so much emotion associated with music. Yeah. So if you associate it together, it's a link.
Well, that's a winner, John. That's a good one. I like that one a lot. We should call him and tell him, put the music in the book, even though you sold 3 trillion, you know, copies all over the world. You know, maybe put music in, you know.
I think another one is attention. Like attention's become so powerful to me as I've gotten older. I mean, you know, we've got a puppy and there's not enough puppy to go around for the 5 of us. And we're kind of, our feelings get hurt over the puppy's attention, if he's paying too much attention to one person. And it just cracks me up. It's like, wow, attention is so important that it hurts our feelings with a puppy.
Well, you better flood the house with pets. You know, now you wonder why they have those pets in the house.
So let's move on a little bit and talk about some ideas. And I think we've already hit on a lot of good ideas. But do you have any other ideas on how to get your partner warmed up during the day? Because I like the idea that the biggest sex organ in a female is the brain. And so to stimulate that all day long, to let her know that she's adored, desired, wanted, loved, that's huge.
So we can do that by, you know, writing things, and we can do that. But really, the strongest way we accomplish that is through verbalization, through how we say the things that we say and when we say it. You know, we want to get people in the mood, you know, for love, you know, in the mood for intimacy. You got to say some things, you know, that, and there are certainly things, you know, that you can say, you know, I want you. I love the way you look. You smell so nice. You know, those are the kind of like the light kinds of things. You say those kind of things, people really appreciate it, you know, and then it goes from that to really to dirty talk. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, you can, you know, if your relationship can absorb that, dirty talk is something that really, you know, you go from, you know, getting in the mood to foreplay talk to dirty talk and, mm-hmm. and you know, really saying, because, you know, men and women are wired differently. And they like, you know, women, they want to imagine like what you're about to do to them. You know, guys want to hear, you know, what you're going to do to them, you know, right? And they want to hear it. You know, they want to hear it loud. And I think that's a really important message, is to develop some things that are not objectionable. And believe me, there are things you can say, and in sex, you know, it's important to be verbal, to, you know, to say, this is what I want to do to you.
Yeah, I think a couple ideas there. I mean, I think that it's important to warm up to that. So if you're doing it like texting throughout the day, kind of warm up to it. If you're doing it in like while you're having sex or during foreplay, warm up to it. And then also check in with your partner afterwards and say, you know, did you like this? What do you think about this? You know, do you want to go further? Because I think that there might be things that you say that are objectionable to someone, where they're like, you know, calling me a bitch in the heat of sex is fine, but calling me the C word isn't, you know, like, so
isn't fine.
You got to know it's a lot of it's about communication, but I think the more you can communicate about it and the more you can push those boundaries together, the better the sex gets.
Yeah. People want to hear they look good in their underwear. You know, people, mm-hmm. you look beautiful.
Yeah. I crave you. I crave your touch. I want right. you.
I want to lick every inch of you. You know, I mean, that these are well received, you know, mostly, not always, but and it's according to what you're looking for during the day. Somebody might want to hear that. They might want to see a text like that, and mm-hmm. it might get them to be thinking about get on the same wavelength as you are.
Well, because, you know, we were talking about anticipation earlier of like a concert or a comedy show or a Broadway play. There's sexual anticipation. So, you know, the anticipation of, I know we're going to make love tonight, or I know we're going to have sex, or I know we're going to fuck. I mean, there's different gears, different speeds of making love. So to anticipate that, to know it's coming, is a real turn on.
And to hear it, mm-hmm. to hear it from you, because we're not telepathic, thank God, you know, because I don't think I'd want to be telepathic, but when you verbalize, you know, I think then they would have new professionals, you know, different than just psychotherapists and psychologists and psychiatrists. I don't know what they'd call them, but it would be. I wouldn't want to be there. That's for sure. Plus, you know, oh no, you didn't want to know what I just thought. But when you tell people you want them and you want to touch them and you want to feel them and they look beautiful and you want to screw the living hell out of them at the right times, at the right, you know, levels, you can, this can really up the game, you know, in a relationship, especially a long haul relationship.
Yeah. And I think that you want to talk about what you want to do to them, you know, if it's during the day beforehand, what I'm going to do to you. And then during the moment, you can describe what you are doing. And it takes a little bit of practice. Part of it's tone of voice, part of it, you know, I think that you want to kind of tap into that. That's where the caveman part can come out. That's where you do tap into the animal. You know, your voice gets lower. You get more of a growl to your voice.
It's okay for couples, you know, to talk about between themselves, like what they want, you know, and how they want it, And, you know, if it's strong, you know, I want it hard, you know, mm-hmm. I want you to really, you know, fuck me hard. You know, I mean, that can really get it going.
Or lighter too. I mean, oftentimes women want it lighter. So just to be able to communicate back and forth what does feel good, I think is critical. And I think the other part of this that I always think of is, you know, you mentioned this needs to be in a relationship. I don't think these tools, I wouldn't use these tools with someone I just met.
No, neither would I. Because then this requires trust. I just got into a freaky relationship with a freakazoid, you know. Yeah. unless, you know, you're one of those freakazoids, you know, which we want to stay away from. And hopefully the other person has the, you know, presence of mind to know that it's time to move away.
I mean, it was interesting. So I just did this interview with Melanie Curtin, who's a sex researcher, and she was saying that it was a pretty high percentage of women experience pain during sex, and they're afraid to speak up. And so I think we as men need to start slow, start soft, and then we can kind of pick up the speed and the pressure. But we've got to communicate about it, and we've got to create a safe space for our partner.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of men know that. I don't think you know, this conversation that you had with her, I don't think they know that. I don't think they think that, you know, there are women who experience ridiculous amounts of pain, you know, and they don't say a word.
We get our education from porn these days, right? Especially the younger generation. And so, you know, we see just pounding away, whether with fingers or a cock, and we think, oh, yeah, that's the way to do it. And then women are receiving that and like, ouch, this doesn't feel good. This hurts.
Also, they're like in the craziest positions. You know what I mean? They're like, they look
upside down.
They look like pretzels hanging from a ceiling. You know, and I guess, you know, athletic wrestlers and people.
Yes, Cirque du Soleil acrobats.
Yes. You know, it's Cirque du Soleil time to screw. You know, I don't think so.
And just to understand that porn is fantasy. It's not reality. And so, you know, I think also just the warning of be careful to men out there how much porn you're watching, because it can affect your brain. And we know that there's a huge erectile dysfunction problem with the 20-somethings because they've watched so much porn that it doesn't, you know, when you get into a real situation with a woman, the real situation.
They can't get it done. They got to depend on Rosie, you know. Yeah.
Rosie Bombs.
Yes. It's, you know, and, you know, look, when I was growing up, it was magazines, you know, pretty tame, very tame. There is nothing tame about pornography that's out there now. I mean, it's just incredible. And I'm not downing, you know, I mean, the truth is that there's a tremendous amount of trafficking and terrible things, you know, that are a part of that whole industry. But I'm not downing, you know, people for watching. But I think your caution, you know, and the reality of millennials and you know, some statistics really ring true, you know, that too much porn, you know, is probably not good. You know,
and I agree. And I think just to be aware as you're watching porn that, you know, most people start out with kind of tame porn. So it's more softcore stuff.
Right.
And then if you keep watching it a lot, the tendency is to get into darker and darker themes and darker. You know, you get more into the hardcore BDSM and people beating people up. And that's not a healthy progression. So you want to be aware of what is it that I'm watching? What does it take for me to get off? And, you know, if you're getting into these darker and darker places, and I've had some clients tell me of some dark shit.
Oh, yeah. You golden know. golden showers.
Yeah. Like, so you want to be careful of what it takes to get you off, I think. And if you're having a problem with porn, I think the 6-week reset is a good way to go. Just take 6 weeks off, let your brain reset, and then, you know, take another shot. But
yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up. It's such a crucial. The other part is that there are, and then when I talk to people, groups about intimacy, I know for a fact, as you do, that many people out there are victims of events when they were younger, you know, mm-hmm. that or recently, and they're not talking about them. They haven't gotten the right professional help. And you're sitting there talking about, well, you should do this and this and that. So I always make a point in all my presentations now to say, by the way, you know, if you were a victim, you know, of sexual assault, anything like that, you're not looking at what we're talking about today through the same glasses. Mm-hmm. And if you're not and you feel awful, please, you know, get professional help because you can change that and you can have what other people have. A lot of people leave that out. They think that it's, you know, I mean, there's more victimization today, I think, than there's ever been.
Yeah. And I think the latest stat is, you know, 1 in 4 women have been a victim of sexual assault. And that's not talking about the percentage of men that have been a victim of sexual assault. But I think that percentage of women is a gross underestimation, because
I agree.
25% of women that have reported being sexually assaulted, there's got to be at least that aren't reporting it.
I can only imagine the amount of people that don't report it and live with it. And the stories, look, the ones that you hear and the ones that you don't hear, I've heard ones that, you know, will chill your blood. Your blood will curdle, you know, when you hear some of the stuff that happened.
So I think as men, we have to be able to talk about that with our partner, be aware of that, because if your partner has been sexually assaulted, it does change the whole game. I mean, you've got to work really hard to make that a safe space.
You're not going to get what you're looking for. You know, you're not going to get what you're looking for, and you're going to think that there's something very wrong. And, you know, it's important to know that. The problem is it's very scary to talk to other people about, you know, that kind of thing, because you're afraid it'll turn them off to you. And then where will you be? You'll be alone, you know, and not even with someone who you even half like. So,
yeah. And so let's talk about, what does it mean to be successful in a romantic relationship? Like, what do you see as success? What are we shooting for?
I think success is people knowing that people are that you're with them, that they're present in your lives. If you're a traveler and you have to travel, you can be present in someone's life, you know, in a romantic way, in a sexual way, even, you know, thousands of miles away. You just have to work on that. And I mean, a lot of people don't like the word work, but, you know, we live in a fantastic world. I had a lady on a show, a very powerful woman who travels all over the world. And she said she travels with this, you know, gadget, you know, that he uses, a joystick 3,000 miles away, you know,
vibrator.
And he manipulates her, you know, it's a long distance vibrator, you know.
Via Bluetooth or wireless. Those are awesome.
And so I think to be successful it takes maintenance. It's not just, you know, I mean, we love, and then we come into patches, you know, ebbs and tides. And I think navigating those ebbs and tides are kind of like show the strength of a romantic and successful relationship, different than the ones who can't, where one little hiccup or one little thing sends them, you know, just into withdrawal, you know, from each other. They're not there anymore. Also, the whole issue of screaming, you know, and arguing and yelling and versus soothing, you know, the whole issue. I mean, I found this out where I was walking in the park with my dog a few times, and I kept seeing this person that I know parking in the park. She could have gone home. I mean, she works hard, attorney, hard worker, you know, a real, you know, a nut buster, actually. But she would stop in the park. And so the third time I saw her, I knocked on her window. I said, "How come you're not going home? What are you doing? You know, is this like Joe's bar? You're stopping to have a cigarette?" I said, "I don't want to go home. As soon as I walk through the door, you know, I'm going to get screamed and yelled at, and it's going to be loud, and it's going to make me, you know, flight fright. It's going to scare I don't want to go. I just don't want that. You know, so I'd rather sit here calmly with a cigarette, knowing that that's going to happen. So at least I'm at least prepared for that kind of thing." So I think soothing, learning to speak to each other in more soothing ways adds greatly to the success of relationships. And, you know, the whole issue of learning to yell from your family of origin, that's also an important part. Knowing at some point that this isn't because of you. This came from, you know, 20, 30 years ago, where your partner learned this at their house when they were growing up. They watched it. They're imitating it. It's got nothing to do with you. So find out these things because they're really important, you know, to know. And it speaks to communication. And you know, a lot of people play down, communication is huge, you know, and knowing what your partner needs, love languages. I mean, people's relationships have been furthered and bettered by those kinds of inputs, you know, that knowing what your partner needs. And that's what contributes to successful relationships. I mean, you know, you and I both know what contributes to unsuccessful relationships because we've seen plenty and we've heard them yelling at each other, you know.
Yeah, I like that idea of, you know, Faith Harper has a definition of trauma as anything that disconnects you from a feeling of safety. Mm-hmm. So I'm always keeping that in mind, thinking, how do I create a feeling of safety at home for my partner and my kids? And I don't always succeed because sometimes I'll lose my temper, but that is so, so infrequent these days. And it's so low intensity and I can recover way more quickly. And so I think to think about that is, you know, every time you lose your temper, that you're disconnecting someone from a feeling of safety.
Yes.
And potentially traumatizing them.
Yeah,
especially for us men that are big and powerful and strong and taller. And we got to keep that in mind. And you know, part of it, I think, is also the repair attempts, of getting better at repairing our relationship once a rift has occurred. That's hard. And all this stuff, I would say,
I mean, people passing in the night and people grudging, you know, that whole grudging thing.
Yeah, holding on to things. And I think, you know, these repair attempts and, you know, getting better at repairing the relationship, this stuff takes work. These are skills you can learn. And, you know, love is not enough. And so part of it is realizing that there are going to be, as you say, ebbs and flows. There are going to be times when you're not getting along as well, when things aren't going well. And it's you're just trudging through mud.
And we tend to go to the negative. I mean, we tend to slide to the negative. We feel the negative. And so if you, instead of telling your partner, you know, I hate when you do this. You know, I can't stand when you do this. You make me sick, you know, when you do this. How about like the opposite? I like it when you do this. You know, mm-hmm. Here's what I like about our relationship. You know, this is what's right with our relationship instead of this is what's wrong with our relationship. Or I like when you touch me that way. I like when you talk to me that way. I like when you compliment me. Those things, they got holding power. They stay.
And I think those things are critical. I mean, you've got that negativity bias of the mind that we have to learn to overcome. And one of the ways to do that, to Zev's point, is gratitude and appreciation daily, multiple times. You want to be filling up that bucket of positive emotions. You want to be draining that bucket of negative emotions, of the resentments, the annoyances, the little, you know, hurts, because that's what leads to the end of a relationship, is going the other way, filling up that bucket of negative emotions and hurts and annoyances.
Yeah, you spoke to the whole issue of grudge, you know, grudging, people getting into fights. You know, forgiveness plays a huge role, you know, in lasting, successful relationships. One time I heard Billy Graham's wife, they asked her, what's the most important thing in your marriage? Forgiveness. Mm. You know, so for a second you think, you know, Billy Graham, you know, the bastion of wonderful, you know, and whatever. But obviously they had their ebbs and tides in their relationship. And she, you know, recognized, you know, that forgiveness is a crucial, you know, and it's not just religious forgiveness, it's forgiveness, period. You know, not holding on, letting go, not grudging, you know, recognizing we're all human, we make mistakes. Some of them are worse than others. Yeah. Some of them are unforgivable. But, you know, but many more are forgivable. And so,
yeah, and I have to put a plug in here for the couples retreat that Jory and I are doing in September of 2020 in Costa Rica. So if you're interested in that, we'll be teaching all of these skills. You can go to theultimaterelationship.com and find out more info.
Very cool. Very cool.
So, Zev, let's go a little bit to, we've got about, you know, 8 minutes left or so. Let's go a little bit to masculinity and what does it mean to be a man? Because this is such a loaded question in this day and age. And I think we need to, in my experience, I think we need to refine the idea of masculinity and leave some of the pieces of old traditional masculinity behind and maybe add some new concepts to the front end going forward.
They talk about a lot of different kinds of guys, you know, that there are guys that are, you know, very masculine, very macho. And then there's all these other new definitions that didn't exist before that have to do with, gentleness or even being more feminine, you know, and recognizing, you know, the feminine input. And it creates for some couples that come from one of them comes from an extremely macho background, it's hard for them to see what it is that they're not doing, you know, or what it is, you know, that they're doing to be Neanderthal. Listening and trying to maybe show that they could be, you know, a little more, but you don't got to give it all away. I mean, it scares me some of the things that I see sometimes, you know, where they're asking for a little too much from some people. Some people, maybe they can give it. There are other people, there's a point where they can't go any further. You know, that's just who they are. And it has a great deal to do with all the functions of their body, you know, and if they don't feel like they're who they are, then, you know, it isn't going to work like a prime machine. They're just not going to, you know, if they're feeling kind of like some kind of, and I've heard guys say, hey, what do I got to be, like a wussy now? Mm-hmm. I got to, you know, like go out, project that I'm some kind of wussy, you know, to people. And that's going to make her happier and him happier and everybody happier. I can't be that. How do I adjust that? You know, and I say, well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about how, because I certainly don't want you to be a wussy, and being a wussy ain't going to help you. Mm-hmm. You know, so let's figure out a way, you know, some taming, something or other that communicates that, you know, you're not, you know, Mr. Neanderthal, and that you do have an ear to what they're saying. You understand it, but you've come to the point where you can't go any further, you know, because otherwise you feel like you're going to lose yourself in this craziness. And it's more so now than ever before, you know, people. I open a door for somebody and people jeer at me, you know, like I open a door for a woman, you know, you could get hit by a baseball bat, you know what I mean? But I don't care. I open doors. I open doors for everybody, you know, it's just the way it is.
Yeah, and I think to me it largely comes down to the ability to shift gears based on the context. So, I mean, there's times when I want to be hypermasculine, where I want to project strength and assertiveness and confidence, like walking down the street in San Francisco in a bad neighborhood. I mean, that's a place where I want to be masculine.
No shit.
I want to take up space.
No shit, man.
If I'm home alone in the bedroom with my fiance, I want to shift out of that, and I want to be vulnerable, and I want to be communicative, and I want to be sensitive, and I want to be able to massage her feet.
And gentle,
it's a matter of having different
contexts
to shift into and knowing which is appropriate for which. But that also means that we have to work on things like anger management, emotional literacy, communication, learning to be vulnerable and open, at least at times.
And recognizing the context that you're in, you know, that you're in a bad, you know, rough neighborhood. You know, it's not a good idea, you know, to relax, you know, your mind. Mm-hmm. It's a good time to have it, you know, so that, you know, you protect who, either yourself or who you're with, because they might be depending on that. So we have that within us. You know, we can work with it. I think, you know, we have to. But I think today people are being asked to go a little further than you know, in ways that don't make sense to them, you know.
And I think men are in a tough position in this day and age. I think we're being asked to do a lot. I think we're being asked to do a lot more than we ever have in terms of growth and maturation and communication and emotional awareness. And I get that it's difficult. I mean, this is not an easy ask.
When men are with men, you hear a lot of this. You don't hear it with men. You hear the not, it's not resistance, just the reaction, you know. Mm-hmm. They'll say things like, I'll hear things like, what do I got to go out? Like, you know, I went to the store the other day and I went to the panty section instead. You know, going to the brief section, you know, I mean, they'll say that because there's a frustration of they just don't know. It's unknown territory.
I also think that this way of evolution is the way to success and happiness. I mean, I think that the resistance to it, the reactivity to it, I think the men that I've talked to that are like, you know, what do I got to do? I got to be a, like a millennial pussy. And the pushback on it, those guys aren't very happy from what I see. And so I think that this path forward through better communication, emotional literacy, anger management, like learning some of these new skills is really the way to happiness and contentment.
And definition. So they don't feel like they're something that they're not, you know, we don't think.
And they don't have to leave behind traditional masculinity at all. They can hold on to that and add new skills.
Exactly. Who knows what the future holds? Who knows what the future holds, you know, for men and women? You know, there is an evolving going on. You know, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know we're going to have phones attached to our fingers, probably. You know, that's a definite.
But I don't know about this. In our head.
Yes. Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Zeb. So I got to wrap up. So is there anything I didn't ask you that I shouldn't have? And tell people how they can connect with you via social media.
So I hope you also, you know, I'm going to plug, I have two couples retreats, one coming up in Sedona at the end of February. You can find out at zev@zevhalpern.com. I have a Facebook group that I do with a woman, Tiffany Toombs, Success, you know, Secrets of Good Relationships. You'll like that. zev@zevhalpern.com. Any question, you know, you might have. And I'm sure John will share my social media platforms, you know, on this. And again, we're out here, we're resources. And
all those links will be shared on the podcast notes as well.
Great.
So Zev, thank you so much for coming along the ride with me. I really appreciate it. This has been a great talk.
It was a nice ride, and thank you. I appreciate it. Have a great weekend, everybody, and you. And congratulations to you on engagement. You know, what could be better?
All right, and that's it for this episode of The Evolved Caveman. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Evolved Caveman podcast. If you like what you've heard, support us by subscribing, leaving reviews, and sharing the podcast with friends and colleagues. For the latest, most powerful tools to connect with like-minded men, join the Facebook group at The Evolved Caveman. Follow Dr. John on Instagram at The Evolved Caveman, all one word, or join the email list by visiting guidetoself.com.